Good evening. This is an interview for the Michigan Writer Series, Friday, October 17th, 2003. Speaking with Tom Bissell, an MSU alumnus who formerly worked in publishing and who is now out promoting his first book, Chasing the Sea, Lost Among the Ghosts of Empire in Central Asia. Welcome back to MSU, Tom.
Thank you very much.
Now, this book has its origins in really the last chapter, Eternal Winter, that you published in Harper's a year and a half ago. But can you pinpoint the exact moment you knew you had to turn your stays and your interest in Uzbekistan into a full book?
Well, it was a sort of interesting story about how this book became a book. I'd written a piece for Harper's about Escanaba, Michigan, and Harper's liked that piece and wanted to publish me again. And my editor had suggested I write something about Uzbekistan, my experience as a Peace Corps volunteer, because obviously I was still rather haunted by the fact that I'd quit. I never really got over it. It was something that bothered me, something I thought about a lot. And he said, well, until you write about it, it's always going to bother you, so why don't you write about it? I thought about writing a Peace Corps memoir about washing out, but that was only going to interest about five people, you know, and I wasn't necessarily one of them. So he and I came up with this idea that I would write a story about the Aral Sea, which was at that time the kind of biggest story that Uzbekistan had to offer the Western, the general Western audience. And so as a sort of formality, I kicked out 2.5 pages of a proposal that he would show to his bosses at Harper's. Well, at the same time, my agent was trying to sell a novel and a short story collection that I'd written, and she couldn't sell that. But one of the editors who really liked it, a woman named Jenny Minton, who worked at Pantheon and who has since left, sadly, she tried to convince her boss to let to buy the stories, and they didn't. But what my agent then did is she sent over these 2 pages, these 2.5 pages I'd written as a kind of formality.
Yeah.
And said, well, what do you think about this? And the next thing I know, I was offered a contract to write a book about.
Wow. Off 2.5 pages.
Which is crazy, because I never even wrote a book proposal, you know? And it's good. I mean, having worked in the industry, I know how completely kooky that story is. But for whatever reason, they saw it, they believed in it, and for that, so it was always sort of going to be a book. I kind of went there with the idea that it was going to be a book.
Okay.
But it was weird writing the end first.
Yeah.
That was weird. But I have sort of end anxiety when I write.
Mm-hmm.
The end is always something that's looming. It's always something I know I have to get to. And I found that having already written the end, I had a much freer and much easier time writing the book, getting there, having the end done. It was really a nice, and I finished it, believe it or not, I finished the book in this library.
Really?
I did. I was visiting my brother, who lives in Lansing, and I was here for 4 days, I spent 2 of the days hunkered on the fourth floor.
Wow.
And I wrote the last word.
Cool.
Here in this library.
A little bit of lore for us here at MSU.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, and that's one thing I kept wondering about is I thought Chasing the Sea is really an apt title because you don't get there until the end, and it's really about the journey and not the destination. But in your author's note at the beginning, you wrote that you're pretty adamant that this is not a travel book or a travelogue of Uzbekistan.
Right.
But that's how some of your reviewers see it. And in fact, Publishers Weekly labeled you as a front runner in the next generation of travel writers.
Yeah.
What's your response to that?
Well, I'm a fiction writer who happens to write travel books.
You
know, what can I say? I think of myself as a fiction writer, you know. I think if my nonfiction is any good, it's because I write nonfiction from a fiction writer's perspective. Now, you know, cynics would say, well, if you're a fiction writer, where's your fiction? You know, well, it's coming. All I can say, I tell you, is it's coming. I'm publishing my first collection next year. But I never tried to be a nonfiction writer. That was a total accident. And so a wonderful accident, one I'm very glad that happened. I like to write nonfiction a lot.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the reason why I said it's not a travel book, because it's not a travelogue in the sense that it's not a record of any kind of experience that I had that, I mean, to put it another way, the material in this is shaped as you would shape material in a novel or a short story. I mean, not everything in it happened in this
Reviewers are trying to pigeonhole you.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway. I mean, reviewers need stuff to say, you know. most reviewers are never going to read a book I write again, you know. So, it helps bookstores, first and foremost, to put something on a shelf. Mm-hmm. Publishers pigeonhole you. That's when you get in trouble.
Yeah.
And I rue the day if I ever have to leave Pantheon, if I ever have to go to another house.
Mm-hmm.
Someone, you know, say, oh God, Bissell wants us to publish his fiction, you know, and it's going to be viewed as this like vanity project or something. Or if when my short story collection comes out, someone writes something like, journalist Bissell tries his hand at fiction. Mm-hmm. If I get something like that, I'm going to go insane and charge off into the night with a rifle, I guarantee you. But,
oh boy.
Yeah.
Well, good. I guess I might as well ask about your fiction now that, your short story, Errol, was nominated for a Pushcart by none other than Joyce Carol Oates.
Yeah.
And talk a little bit more about your forthcoming Central Asian-themed collection.
Yeah, they're all Central Asia stories.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them were written, all of them were written except for one before this book. The short story, Errol, that I wrote, that Ms. Oates was kind enough to nominate for the Pushcart, I wrote that in 1997. I wrote that a long time ago. And I wrote that long before I had ever visited the Aral Sea. Long before. And it's a very weird story in that sense that after I had actually visited, I wanted to go back and fix all the mistakes, quote unquote. I'm making quote marks right now.
Yes.
Fix all the mistakes. Well, then I realized that stories are exercising the imagination. And journalism is an exercise in something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked all the mistakes, all the implausibilities in the story. Because you don't care in the story. In a story, the only universe that matters is the universe the story creates. But when you're writing a work of nonfiction, you have to honor the actual universe you experienced. And so, you know, that's a really weird story for me to read now, considering that I, you know, foremost among all of that story's readers will be me saying, well, that's impossible. That can't happen, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But they're all Central Asia related. They're all rather dark, I might add. Not many of them have the humor of the book. I'm not sure why that is, but it's fairly grim.
Maybe you were in a little darker place when you wrote most of them.
I don't know. I'm a fairly cheerful, funny guy, I hope. but writing fiction about that part of the world is, you know, there's the stories that interest me the most are pretty sad stories. So.
Well, fair enough. Now, getting back to Chasing the Sea, you wrote early on that the press officer at the U.S. Embassy in the capital city of Tashkent, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He admonished you to be, quote-unquote, balanced in your writing about Uzbekistan because many Western journalists haven't been so, and in fact, you skewered A.A. Gill later in the book. But throughout your travels, then, the people you met, among them the nurse at the Nukas TB dispensary, implored the same of you when they learned that you were a writer. Write good things about us. You know, write good things about us. So do you think you did, that you accomplished that?
I hope so. the people I wasn't fair to are probably the SNB, the secret police, and Islam Karimov, the president. But
yes.
I didn't necessarily want to be too fair to those guys. But yeah, I mean, another thing that sort of makes me hesitant to call it a travel book is it's so much travel literature is written by people who just go around, and every description of anyone or anything is a negative description.
Mm-hmm.
And once you become aware of that and you start reading this work with that in mind, it can quickly really kind of freak you out as to how all the negative energy that comes out of these writers' imaginations.
Yeah.
And as something I've noticed in a lot of fiction writers, too, if I'm reading a short story and whereas every description seems to be pointing out that someone is ugly or has a zit or their clothes don't fit them right, well, it starts to seem like a writer is sort of trying to clear all the, kind of clean all the dirty corners of his or her mind, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to write a book that had some joy in it and sort of talked about people in a way that was appreciative and sort of recognized all of our shared humanity and was fair to people because most people do things for fairly good reasons, you know? And when travel writers drive down the road, and they describe people doing these foreigners doing these crazy things that they see. Of course, I do that too. For instance, there's a guy in a pogo stick, you know, jumping along down the road. But I hope I don't make fun of him. I just say that that's rather.
You were just an observer.
Yeah, I was just observing it. But you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I just wanted to give the country, the culture, the people a fair shake, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think you did, and particularly your descriptions of the average, ordinary people you met, you know, their general optimism despite their very mm-hmm. perilous lives.
Yeah.
Now, do you know what kind of reaction, if any, yet your book has been met with in Uzbekistan?
I don't.
Are there plans to translate it into Uzbek or Russian?
Well, if it's translated into Uzbek or Russian, I can guarantee you I will never see a cent from that. From that.
True. Pirated.
Yeah, they have more pirates than the Mediterranean Ocean in the 1600s. I don't know what the response in Uzbekistan is. I doubt there really will be one. I suspect most of the people in the country won't really be aware of it. I have heard from a few Uzbek people who live in this country who have thanked me and who say they really like the book. Some of the people I've written about, a couple of the Peace Corps volunteers I wrote about in particular, mm-hmm. who remember things happening a little bit differently than I do and who don't like the way I wrote about them, even though they're disguised. Are not too thrilled about it, but, you know, that's okay.
Okay. Well, this, being the Michigan Writer Series, we always ask our guests something along the lines of what impact living in Michigan has on their writing or being from Michigan mm-hmm. or whatever. I'm taking a little different approach here, because you noted a few times in your book, for instance, how Gulistan, the city where you served as Peace Corps volunteer, and then the Karakalpak people reminded you of, quote-unquote, the reflexive recalcitrance of the Upper Peninsula's inhabitants.
Yeah.
How are, say, you know, native New Yorkers, to whom the UP is as foreign as Uzbekistan, supposed to understand that comparison?
Well, you know, maybe they're not. That's for me. That stuff's for
okay.
me.
Okay. And since you're giving a reading in your hometown of Escanaba on Monday night, how do you think the folks there will take those comparisons?
Well, I already wrote about Escanaba, and it was a scandal.
Well, yeah. About the filming of Escanaba and the Moonlight.
Yeah, and the Moonlight. And, you know, I hope they'll be flattered. I mean, it's one of the things I admire about the Karakalpaks. I say that in the context of the Karakalpaks being one of the only people who basically just laughed at Soviet dogma, you know, mm-hmm. who didn't take it seriously at all, who just kind of rolled their eyes at it. And so the context in which I'm talking about it, I try to mean it as a fairly positive thing.
Okay, with like the self-deprecating humor of the music group Da Ubers or something.
Yeah, well, no, you know, in the sense turning... that it's in the sense that people who put on airs or something like that, or people who are maybe a little bit too self-serious, or people who don't have, you know, or people who are take themselves very seriously. There's a lot of, you know, in the UP, certainly where I grew up, where a lot of get over yourself, or mm-hmm. it's the kind of place where, you know, being the salt of the earth or being. Being humble is considered one of the most positive and beneficial character traits one can have, and I still feel that way.
Yeah.
Myself, I mean, it's inbred in me so deeply that you know I certainly feel that way still. But
you're not used to all this attention that you're getting then, or you don't know what to.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I try to think about it. Just try to write and, you know, be a nice person and live my life. But the deeper answer to that question, especially in regards to this book, is the Aral Sea had is almost exactly as much water volume as Lake Michigan. Yeah. And I talk about that at several points. And
yes.
I really love Lake Michigan. I grew up, my parents mm-hmm. had a house right on Lake Michigan. And the thought of a body of water as large as Lake Michigan vanishing in 40 years mm-hmm. Was such a vivid... such an apocalyptically vivid image for me that I think maybe I was uniquely, well, not uniquely susceptible, but certainly susceptible in a uncommonly powerful way to the story of the Aral Sea.
Well, certainly I think someone from, say, Arizona
exactly.
or New Mexico would write this book much differently than you did. You had an immediate frame of reference with being from the Great Lakes state.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, of how precious water is, even if it's salt water and it's only good for... you know, fishing, as they did in the Aral Sea.
Yeah, people in New York say, well, lakes dry up all the time, you know. But they don't
they don't get a clue.
They don't understand the scale of the disaster. They really don't. And only when you say that it's the size of Massachusetts,
mm-hmm.
the area that the
that's dried up already
is as large as Massachusetts, do they kind of go, oh, wow.
That's their
That is a
reference.
Lot, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your bibliography at the end of the book, you noted that you traveled to Afghanistan in December of 2001
mm-hmm.
and initially included in Chasing the Sea a chapter about that experience.
Yeah.
No, you removed it because it didn't fit with the narrative flow of the book. So I understand that. But would you care to explain why it wasn't published in the magazine that sent you to Afghanistan?
Because the magazine that sent me to Afghanistan is a magazine called Men's Journal, which is run by idiots and fools and who wouldn't know a good piece of magazine journalism if it bit them in the ass. So yeah, that's basically my answer to that. I've written for them several times.
Yeah.
And my editor there is a good man, but... I'll tell you the story. I wrote this piece. It was about going into a war zone, realizing you're in way over your head, and coming out with a very ambivalent response.
Yeah.
And the editor-in-chief of Men's Journal read my story, which he sat on for 4 months, mind you. I mean, this story was storyboarded. Mm-hmm. They had it plotted out. They had the photos all set. And then he just pulled it the last minute. His reason for doing so was there just aren't any heroes in it. There aren't any heroes in it. My voice gave out there. There aren't any heroes in it. Why would the average Men's Journal reader want to read this?
To enlighten themselves, maybe?
Yeah, I personally believe that a piece of good writing, which I hoped that story was, is inherently interesting. The happy ending to this story is that was an honorable mention for Best American Travel Writing this year, that story, even though it appeared on the internet.
Yeah.
And Men's Journal, had they published it, that would have been their only honorable mention, or so, you know, the hell with them.
Right.
It was a very embittering experience because I was very proud of that piece, and if I ever do publish a collection of my magazine work, that will be prominently
good
positioned in it.
And it is still available on the web.
Yeah, you can just type
in wordhum.com.
The piece is called War Zones for Idiots, so it's very easily findable.
Good. Now, speaking of the internet, and on a little lighter note, if someone goes to Amazon.com to buy a copy of Chasing the Sea, she might find a little lesser-known work of yours entitled The Belly Button Fiasco.
Yeah.
Would you tell me about your experiment in publishing through Ex Libris, and have you sold any copies?
Yeah, we have sold some copies.
Oh my God.
Sold about 100 copies. The funny thing is you know, being a writer is hard, and working in publishing is even harder. And when my friend Webster Janssen and I wrote this book, we were both so broke that Harper's paid me for the piece, and we agreed that Webb would keep the royalties for Belly Button Fiasco. I got off, believe me, I, you know, made out like a bandit in that particular agreement. But, you know, as my book is published, I'm hoping, you know, maybe some people will start buying Belly Button Fiasco, which is just a ridiculously stupid book. Webb insisted that we write it under pseudonyms, but it just didn't seem to me that it would be as funny if we did that. It was a practical joke on the publisher Ex Libris, which claimed to be something more than a vanity press. And Mr. Janssen and I just proved that by writing a horrifically bad book in 30 days and submitting to them and watching them publish it. I have another book that's out right now called Speak Commentary that McSweeney's Books just published. And that's a book I'm a little bit more fond of and will take. And
tell us a little bit about it.
It's a collection of fake DVD commentaries for science fiction films. Noam Chomsky and Howard Zinn commentate on Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, in which they take this ultra-lefty defense of the orcs, in which they say the orcs are just fighting a war of self-defense. You know, the ring is just a pretext. It's really all about pipeweed. Ann Coulter and Dinesh D'Souza do Aliens. Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell do Planet of the Apes. Dick Cheney, Bill Bennett do Star Wars The Phantom Menace, which they seem to understand as being this huge analogy for S.H.I.E.L.D. technology, you know? So it's just, I have a comedy writer somewhere in me, probably not a very good one, but he's in there. So these books give me an opportunity to express that.
Well, your humor does certainly come through in Chasing the Sea, and particularly self-deprecating. You know, I loved your run-in with, I didn't love it. I was really hoping, I'm like, oh my God, this is almost too terrifying to be happening, and I hope it's not. But when you were trying to track down a journalist's wife to give her $2,000 and you were stopped by the police.
Yeah.
And you made up a pseudonym for the woman you were looking for, Anna, and you said, no, Uzbek women have the name of Anna, so you had to think of a Russian surname, and you kept telling yourself, don't say Karenina, don't say Karenina. Yeah, that was self-deprecating, but also very enlightening, too. But lastly, what other projects are you currently working on?
I write a fairly regular, lit crit kind of thing for a magazine called The Believer. I write five pieces a year for that magazine. I was just in the Arctic for Harper's for a month. That piece will come out sometime, I hope soon.
Wow, you're in the Arctic?
Yeah, I was in the Arctic, yeah. Yeah, it was summer, so it was not bad. And I'm going to Vietnam next month to write a piece about my dad, and who's a vet, who's never been back. He and I are going to go together.
Oh, wow.
And I'm going to write a piece for GQ about that, and that, too, is going to be expanded into a shortish kind of travel log. So, and then I'd like to never write nonfiction again. But we'll see. I don't know. Maybe I'll just do nothing but travel books. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe I'll be an editor again. I don't know.
I hope your fiction will be successful.
Yeah.
And good luck with all of your endeavors.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom, for participating in the MSU Libraries Michigan Writer Series. And I hope you enjoy your reading here tonight.
Thanks.